Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, the go-to podcast for CPA firms seeking transformative insights. I'm your host, Lawrence Whittam, and with each episode, we'll uncover key insights, best practices, and invaluable resources tailored for CPAs. From trending strategies to diving deep into outsourcing and offshoring, our experts will help in all areas of your business.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Business Beyond Borders. So today I have a great episode with a good friend of mine. And again, we've crossed paths more recently than not, I would say, over the past sort of year or so. And this is Darren Isaacs from Macozy. So, and again, they've been around for quite a number of years, working with a range of firms from some of the largest firms in the US. And again, a slightly different model than other people are used to and have seen, right? Especially with maybe smaller and mid-sized firms, right? But it's something that, again, it's somewhat gone the opposite way from a lot of outsourcing, and it's come more from the larger firms and gone downstream in comparison to a lot of outsourcing starts with the smaller firms and then it has gone upstream over the years. So Darren, I would let you give yourself a quick introduction if that works.
Yeah, good stuff. Good to be here. So Darren Isaacs, I founded Macozy in 2006. So yeah, I've been doing this for a very long time. Can probably tell by the accent, not from around here, originally from South Africa. I'm a proud chartered accountant, did my time at PwC before starting the firm. And I think we're solving the biggest problem in public accounting right now, which is talent. The number of people coming into the industry has really halved in the past decade, and so many opportunities for firms to carry on growing out there. Lawrence, as you mentioned there, you know, where we started initially was with kind of high end of middle market firms and providing more of an insourcing model. So we created a kind of a white labeled secondment model, recruiting talent out of South Africa. And we would do the visas, accommodation, and all that thing that the bigger firms really enjoyed, but wasn't available to middle market firms. So our original model was doing on-site secondments, recruiting people from Australia, South Africa, a bit of Philippines and Canada as well, in multiple communities. But now our model is moving more into, you know, providing those secondments, but also doing pure outsourcing and also building global delivery centers for our clients as well.
So now, obviously, you mentioned that you came from a Big Four background yourself. Now, so what actually came, or how did this idea resonate to create Macozy? Is it that you were working with, you were seeing PwC or some of these other larger firms doing similar things between their offices, or how did the idea originate? Because you guys are one of really the founding groups that have started this area, right? Especially from South Africa.
Yeah, so Deloitte invented what is called the just-in-time staffing model, or their JIT program. They kind of started it probably late 90s, and the other Big Four firms were a little bit slow to kind of adapt. And so in 2001, showing my age here, I was lucky enough to be seconded in the first year that PwC did secondments. So I was seconded from Johannesburg to New York City, worked on amazing clients, and it was just this great opportunity for South African talent to kind of go on that adventure, you know, come to the US for a busy season, work on international clients. Just amazing from a personal experience point of view. And so a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, well, why is that opportunity only available for Big Four talent? And why should the Big Four be the only firms that have access to that type of model? Because obviously it's a problem. Busy season is challenging. So the original idea was to offer that same model to the upper end of the middle market firms. And so Eisner Ampa was actually our first client, you know, took a chance with us in 2006, and we still work with them to this day. But that's a common model was pioneered by Deloitte, and then really Macozy started in bringing that secondment model to middle market firms, and the rest is kind of history.
Cool. And then what type of services would you say, again, from South Africa, what's the type of talent that is available there? What are those what do they look like from, okay, you get an accountant, so you bring in tax people, you bring in an auditor, so what does that look like?
So a chartered accountant from South Africa is It's actually recently been recognized as the top accounting certification globally. It's the most trusted, that most trusted credential globally. And part of the reason for that is the 3 years worth of hours that are required to become a chartered accountant. So there's a 4-year college degree requirement, and then you have to spend the full 3 years in what is called your articles. So I spent my article years at PwC, and then typically at the end of those articles, you get that certification, and that is where people are looking now for some international experience. So our original model was to really recruit those people that were maturing out of those article programs, and the benefit was that they were kind of de facto seniors. You know, they already had 3 years of experience, and they would have been trained up by great firms in SA. Now that 3 years worth of articles experience is very structured, and it's governed by the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. And that program really, it's not, even though it's primarily an audit certification, it covers a lot more than that. You know, there's internal audit, IT audit, there is some transaction advisory stuff built in there as well. So it's not your typical bread and butter auditor. There's quite a lot of other stuff that gets thrown into those 3 years, as well as the college degree as well.
So I guess when it comes to working with the firms as well, like, what are you typically seeing? Like what works best, right? I mean, when it comes to somewhat best practices and the style that you guys have, there's not too many firms doing this secondment type of work, right? So like, what should firms look out for when they're doing that? Is it that they should really hand over a full project, right? Again, with some training, or is it that they should be including team members within teams that are already working on a specific audit? Like, what should that look like?
It's a great question, because it's the market never stays still, right? And so what we used to provide, you know, 10 years ago definitely is different now, but particularly the last 2 years is very different. You know, coming out of COVID, crazy time, those kind of 2 years post COVID were where firms really got their heads around virtual work. So, you know, before COVID, there was outsourcing, where you kind of give away a piece of work, and then there was secondments, where you would bring talent onshore. So what COVID allowed us to do was bring the talent, but in a virtual environment. And so what we, our bread and butter was really providing that audit senior. So we would provide seniors, people with 3 to 5 years worth of experience, and they would integrate into our client teams. So there's an audit going on, requires 3 seniors, a manager and a senior manager. You know, we could supplement that team with most of those audit seniors and potentially a manager as well. But we're seeing more and more needs now for clients to do a lot more pure outsourcing. And mm-hmm. So that's where we now have a SAICA certified training office. We can really manufacture our own chartered accountants out of South Africa and other regions as well. And we're building global delivery centers too. So more and more of the work is kind of coming into our hands. We're able to produce that end product, you know, particularly around employee benefit plan audits, for example. And one of our main differentiators there is the fact that we embed innovation and technology into our process. So it's not just, you know, we'll apply people and we'll kind of get that end product out. We have continuous improvement built in, a center of excellence to actually automate a lot of the work. And what it does, particularly for middle market firms, is it rationalizes the investment in technology. So I think you're seeing with private equity and some of these other advancements in the industry, a lot of the firms maybe don't have that budget to invest in technology. So they find themselves consolidating into other firms or being bought up by private equity to really get that investment. The benefit with us is that we have the scale, like we do the investment in technology and our clients get the benefit through, you know, much faster audits and components of audits as well.
So I guess what does that take? Because that sounds pretty unique compared to other, and again, outsourcing firms or vendors doing this area, right? Focusing on the staffing area, right? So when it comes to how does that develop from the secondment and or virtual staffing that they're working with you for to looking into the technology aspect, right? Is that normally a beginning stage? Is that, no, let us implement people first, then start looking at the process to then look into the technology elements? Because again, it's not, there's a lot of change management that needs to go on within the firm as well for any type of technology change or implementation. So like, how does that sort of look with you guys?
So I think a good kind of framework to use is the digital transformation curve. And it's kind of this curve where you'll spend a lot of time before you actually start getting that benefit. And it kind of really ramps up in a parabola almost. And then it flattens off as, you know, as you get into that area of diminishing returns. And so it requires a lot of effort to start getting value. And so clients are a little bit deer in the headlights almost, saying, I don't really want to get started now because it's going to take us so long mm-hmm. to kind of reap those rewards. But if you look at brands like BlackBerry and Nokia and Blockbuster, those are all companies, not public accounting firms, companies that had that same kind of dilemma. And so it's really important, we feel, that firms are starting now with digital transformation, even if they're not exactly sure how they want to do it, just get started. And so how we see that working is that when we build out a shared service center, the first thing that we do is we map out that process and we say, well, are the people in that process operating at the top of their certificate level? And I think one of the challenges in the industry is that, you know, seniors and managers are spending, you know, up to 70% of their time doing work that is actually lower than their certificate level. So the first thing we do is we break out that piece of work and say, well, what are the certificate levels? And then channel that level of work to the right people. So that's setting up your production line mm-hmm. almost. And then the next thing for us anyway is having a center of excellence set up that is really, you know, people with like stopwatches and clipboards that are saying, well, how do we make that go faster? And let's do A/B testing on a particular piece of that process. And then overlaying what we call the robotic operating model, which is farming for automation opportunities as part of your BAU. So it can't be something where, you know, at the end of a busy season, you say, well, what did we learn? You know, because you've kind of forgotten all that stuff already.
Yeah.
So we have
you haven't even tracked the things that you needed to track.
You haven't tracked
to understand. Yeah.
It's kind of like doing your timesheet at the end of the month. You know, you don't know what, you know. So we have that embedded. We have a separate team and a separate function embedded into our process that the guys are just doing their work. And we have a dedicated team that is actually looking and watching what is being done there. And that's our investment into technology that, again, our clients don't have to do.
Now, when bringing it back a little bit to the people side of it, right, in South Africa specifically, right, where the majority of the talent is that you're using, like, what do firms need to understand, right, from the legal perspective, from the, and again, I know that working with Makosi, you don't have to think about those things, right, because you guys handle it. But I think just to give an overlay of the land itself, right, because there are also employment of record style type companies. There are all these different options in it. And I want to make sure that people understand that, like, yes, you can go the option of, you can find talent there, you can go and do it. But there are, again, there are complications when you do that, right? So if you can give a bit of the background of just having employees, having contractors, having people on staff in South Africa, what does that look like for you? So that people understand, like, that level of investment that they would have to make in order to make it worthwhile if they wanted to go that route, right?
Wow, it's a great question. So firstly, in terms of the benefits of South Africa, South Africa is one of the few countries in the world that actually produces more accountants than the country needs. Now, that won't last forever. We're seeing the numbers in South Africa going down, much like most other geographies. But South Africa is still a market with a frothy accounting pool, great brand of Sika and that type of thing. So it is a pretty frothy market over there. I hope you like my accent. You know, we are well spoken, energetic, hardworking people. And our time zone is roughly the same as Europe. Okay, so great certification, a lot of high quality people, high literacy rates and that type of thing. So beautiful country to visit as well. The complications come in a number of different things. Firstly, taxes. South Africa is maniacal about what we call permanent establishment. So if you are operating or generating, even if you're using a contract in South Africa, South Africa is going to monitor, well, how much profit did your company make out of using a contractor in South Africa? And you can unknowingly establish what is called permanent establishment. The government in South Africa treats you as if you're operating a business in South Africa. So you have to be really careful. If you want to do this on your own, you will get into trouble from a tax point of view. You'll have the tax authorities coming after you under the permanent establishment rules. Two other important things to be aware of is South Africa is a country that does not have employment at will regulations, much like, you know, just like the US, for example. So if you're employing someone in South Africa, you are kind of getting married to them. It's a long-term commitment. So you want to make sure that you're setting up your contracts appropriately with the employee in South Africa so that it's very, very difficult to unwind an employment arrangement. So you just need to bear that in mind. You know, there are risks to hiring. You want to be really sure that you want to hire that person because you will be committed for the long term. So, you know, there's in the US, at least, you say hire long, fire quickly. In South Africa, it's kind of like hire extra long so that you can make sure, because you can't fire quickly.
Yeah.
The only other thing to bear in mind is something that is actually I'm proud of in South Africa, something called triple BEE, and that is broad-based Black economic empowerment. So it was a mechanism to really empower the disadvantaged community in South Africa when South Africa came out of the apartheid era.
Mm-hmm.
So complicated political background, South Africa. So there are metrics and regulations that you as a company need to abide by and have certain levels of people and you know, Black ownership and that type of thing in your firm in South Africa. So I think it's a really good thing. It's been a major empowering force in South Africa, really empowering those that population that was disadvantaged in the apartheid era. But it's something that firms would need to navigate if they intend to set up operations there as well. So really those three things.
So really putting regulations around the diversity in the firm is
a
huge thing over there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And again, I think as a South African, I see it as a real positive, you know, but for a foreign firm investing in South Africa, they might not really care about that, you know. But it is something just to bear in mind and rather have a strategy around that. If that's a requirement in that country, then make the most of it. Say, you know, we're pumping up our diversity numbers, we're doing good things for Africa and that type of thing. So rather take advantage of that, but it's not something to be taken lightly at all.
Yeah, and I think one of the areas is not many people are going to ask that question even coming into those types of situations, right? They're not going to think about it as an option. So no, very, very helpful from that perspective. Now, let's dig back into some common challenges that you see firms sort of facing when it comes to, again, working with McKinsey over the years, working with other outsourcing firms that you see that, let's say from their side, right? Whether it's the investment, whether it's the communication challenges, like there are different things for different geographies and firms. Like, what would you say and highlight as some of those top areas that are challenges that people need to be aware of so they can overcome that before it becomes an obstacle?
Wow. Okay. I think one that we battle with quite a bit with our clients, and I think it's almost a factor of clients need to get out of their own way a little bit. Is that if clients have specific methodologies or they have specific ideas about the just hang on one sec, the dog is scratching and I've got something in my chair. So just pause for a second. Sorry, man. The dog is like scratching on the door here. Vacuum's going off in the background.
No, you're good. So let's do this.
You want me to answer that question or?
Yeah. I mean, I would just from like 23 to 24, 20-ish. Okay. So I've just made a note so she can do it. But yeah, if you want to just start that question again, if you want to answer that, and then I'll cut it accordingly.
Okay. Yeah, we'll cut it. So I think challenges that firms often have is their own, they're very precious about their methodology. And I think that they should be. But there is an element that kind of 80-20 rule. You know, what are the things that are really important from a methodology perspective? And obviously bearing in mind ISQM and that type of thing. But I think that firms often get in their own way in terms of it has to be absolutely perfect before we move forward. And I think what we provide is really that support mechanism. We aren't just handing over people for you to go and manage. We're really a partner with you. We have our engagement management team. Our people might be working on a different time zone. So we have our teams there that are answering technical questions. We have our learning and development group as well that are really skilling our people up. And I'm sure you see it, Lawrence, as well, that you know, other firms will move too quickly and just mess it up. And other firms might just, you know, not be willing to move because they have to know every single thing. So establishing that right kind of balance and setting up that governance model to really say that this thing is working or it isn't working. And one of the things there is being really specific around skill sets. You know, we've seen clients coming to us and saying, have you got people that have done a specific type of cryptocurrency audit and we need 14 of them? We're like, well, those people don't really exist. So we can support you. We can get you someone who's 80% of the way, and we can support that person with learning and development. We can really like monitor and come up with a solution here instead of having that as a roadblock for us moving forward.
Yeah, like again, they're wanting and waiting for that 10 out of 10 person. But again, I mean, you're never going to get anything done if you wait. And because they're not going to come around every day, and you're not going to find 14 of them, right? You're going to find one out of every 50 as of right now as well. It's getting more and more difficult. So, okay. And then what about the accounting profession itself, right? I mean, you've been in it since 2006, you mentioned, right? And that's just with Mikosa. You were in it before as well, right? With your PwC days. But it's been a fast, now since COVID especially, like very fast moving, right? A lot of changes. And I would say that prior to that, much slower from the change perspective, right? And so where do you see the accounting profession going, just even over the next sort of 5 years as well? And again, with all this talk of talent shortages and private equity getting involved, just can you give me a bit of your understanding of what's going on as well?
I know it sounds crazy, but I think it's probably the most exciting industry to be in. And I know that people would kind of laugh at that, you know, a bunch of accountants speak in the most exciting industry. But, you know, the growth potential in public accounting, just unlimited growth opportunities, limitless opportunities for innovation and disruption as well. New service lines. We're seeing a lot of kind of overlap between like public accounting and the legal industry as well. You know, lawyers are doing tax work and accountants are doing legal work as well. So I think we'll see some interesting things in that space as well. But there's just so much good stuff. And I think part of it comes from exactly what you said there, that it was stagnant for a long time. And so there's this kind of pent up opportunity out in the market there. And again, I think it comes back to, yes, there's interest from private equity. The firms are valued very low, you know, very conservative valuations trading between each other and even trading into private equity. So, you know, recurring revenue, generate cash, really reliable. We've obviously got that partner model to kind of navigate. But if you had to rip out the wires on this, on the industry, it's really kind of tech first, innovation first, service first for our clients. And we also feel that public accounting has a real role to play in changing the world. We've all spoken about ESG and the role that will play in the behaviors of consumers, how consumers select which brand they want to buy from. I want to buy from Patagonia, not from Nike or whoever. So consumer behavior. And I think that ESG will attract a lot more accountants into the industry, because now there'll be something, you know, a bigger reason why people are actually doing that work. And again, public accounting will have a bigger role to play in global governance as well. So cool. You can tell I'm fired up about,
ready. The industry. We're ready. So no, that's great. No, appreciate it, Darren. And as we sort of wrap up, because again, we could go on for hours, I feel like, but we've got to wrap up. So can you let everybody know where they can find you, right? And that would be most helpful. And we'll definitely drop your contact information as well for everybody to reach out. But if they have any questions, what's the best place?
Yeah, please go to Mackozy.com. Check out our website. You can also send me an email, darren.isaacs@mackozy.com, or help@mackozy.com. Go to our LinkedIn page. We share a lot of content there as well. And lastly, chat to people in your network that have likely worked with us or heard of us. We have a very, very high reference rate within our client base. So chat within your network, mention our name, and I'm sure someone would have heard of us.
Perfect. Yeah, appreciate it, Darren. So I hope everyone had a good time listening today. And again, we got a couple of funny accents both from both sides of it. So no, I really appreciate the time, Darren. And again, everybody, look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Business Beyond Borders. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Beyond Borders. I'm Lawrence Whittam, and it's been a pleasure bringing you impactful insights tailored for the modern CPA firm. Remember, the world of accounting is vast and ever-evolving, and we're here to navigate it together. For more resources and episodes, don't forget to subscribe and reach out to our experts. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of your business and explore the limitless possibilities beyond borders.